said, listen, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valleys there, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Been to Millview, Rockview, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Roots, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Innsburg, Orton, Harrisburg, right. Pittsburgh, Wellesburg, Rock City, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, yeah, Big Shanny, I'm a Danny.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
Don't step on me when I'm stepping on you.
Okay, all right, let's go.
You go.
Welcome to part two of
We were saying yesterday, this is a slow podcast. You know, we don't rush to give you the results right away. We take our time like a fine cone.
If you want fast food journalism, this isn't for you.
This isn't for you. This is not Burger King. You can't have it how you want it.
No, we are the
this is artisanal, handcrafted podcasting.
Yeah, if you want the locally sourced, food dinner at 9:30 p.m.,
right.
You know, or maybe even 10,
right?
But it's really well made. You know, that's
right. Instead of farm to table, we're like brain to microphone.
Exactly.
Brain to pong.
Brain to pod
podcast.
Is that what you said? Brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We can rebrand ourselves.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Instead of building the time.
We're talking about Pennsylvania a little bit.
And the election results. But I guess you knew that since it's called the election results podcast.
Yeah, that's true. We were joking a little bit, but I feel like people want to, people treat it sometimes too much like sports. It's like, okay, this side won, that side lost, now we're moving on. I mean, to me, you know, it's still a transition. I still want to dig into like what some of the trends mean.
Yeah.
You know, this is just a small thing, but, I want to know what Democrats running in places kind of like our area, you know, majority Republican went for Trump, rural, or I keep trying to rebrand rural as town and country. So who in Pennsylvania running at the state level did way better than expected, maybe within like they got 45%, like something that seems like you're getting close to you could win or actually won.
I feel like Union County was actually that way. I mean, Casey did, or Wolf did, over 45% of the vote, right?
In Union County, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like...
It's about 10 or 11 points better, or 7 points better than...
Jack, maybe 50.
Rager K?
Yeah, and like 15 points better than Hillary Clinton.
Really?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I think she got maybe 33% of the vote or something like that in Union County.
That's interesting. I mean, I do have 32 to 33 in my head is like... If you only get the most hardcore Dems, that's what you're going to get in Union County.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
So Wolf is one. That's a good point. So what? I mean, let's go there. Like, why is
I spent a lot of time.
Why is Wolf more popular?
Yeah, well, Wolf did really well. Sorry, go ahead.
Why is he more popular than other Democrats? I don't have a good answer.
I don't have a good answer either. And it's not like he is very much.
He's not charismatic.
Like he really keeps. He's not charismatic and he doesn't. I like don't see him a lot in the news. Like he really keeps his head down. But maybe that's like what makes a good executive.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you know, and he doesn't deliver results, I guess.
Yeah.
And I wonder if people actually. It's one of those things that I'm like, maybe people actually pay attention to his record and, make a decision like a rationally based decision. Look,
this
you
is
know?
Not a science like, fiction podcast, Taylor. Don't throw out wild speculations.
Yeah,
I don't buy that.
But it's moments like that where I'm like, maybe people do actually.
No.
Make a
maybe we can break the speed of light barrier. No, it's not that. It may be that his record to, you know, I'm not going to abandon a model that says that most people are voting around, you know, the equivalent of brand and symbolism and this is always, elections are always contests between those things. That's not to say that somebody's brand can't be about their record or about something policy oriented, you know. I mean, Bernie Sanders clearly, you know, his brand is about energy and about, you know, change and democratic socialism. But that means for a lot of people, Medicare for all, free education, free higher education or something like that. So I think, I think Wolf is seen, going back, I'm agreeing with you. I think people see him as very competent, that he doesn't, you know, he doesn't get into ridiculous mudslinging.
Yeah. Neither does Casey, you know, and we had that going for us here in Pennsylvania. I mean, I'll posit, you know, maybe this wasn't actually about Wolf even. Maybe this was about Scott Wagner.
I was about to say, you know, very similar. I mean,
being a ridiculous loudmouth, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a piece of shit, like transparently.
Yeah, absolutely. Barletta and Wagner were both cut from, if anything, Trump is cut from the cloth of Barletta. I mean, Barletta pioneered a kind of revanchist. I heard a conservative use that word today. And I was like, ooh, that's a good word.
Revanchist,
you know, white, like Republicans as a party of white grievance. I mean, that's Barletta's white bread and butter. Did you see what I did there?
Yeah, I did.
And it was pretty thoroughly rejected. And that's, I feel like, you know, I haven't actually read a lot of national or state media, so I say this very tentatively, but that's a headline that people haven't made as much about. You know, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Buyer's remorse from Trump.
Yes, that's right. Buyer's remorse from Trump. So part of Wolf's appeal was that he was very not Trumpian, not Wagner, not, and Casey, not Barletta.
Yeah. And I could go for Bob Casey, although he was trying to be a little bit more sort of attack doggy, you know, this cycle. But I think that served him well.
I mean, I saw Casey speak twice in our area, once in Union County, once in Northumberland. And I mean, if he's an attack dog, he's a very measured, thoughtful, facts-based attack dog. I mean, one of the things I loved about Casey was in Union County and in Northumberland County, he would be standing there and he has that way, like it looks like he kind of has a pebble in his mouth, like his jaw shifts left to right as he's about to talk, you know? So he's like, healthcare is really important to people in our state. And he goes, and then he pulls a little scrap of paper out of his pocket. I mean, I love this. And he goes, because of the Affordable Care Act, 4,233 people in Union County now have health insurance. I mean, that's a great moment.
Yeah.
And Wolf also was very good on healthcare. There's been a lot of budget shenanigans in Pennsylvania, and I think people saw him as – this is one of these things that Democrats can never seem to get enough credit for, the fact that we're often not the ones who are doing weird things with government budgets, but we believe in good governance and effective governance, and so we don't like to play games with budgets. Meanwhile, the state, Pennsylvania legislature controlled by the Republicans, keeps trying to pull Enron/Wells Fargo/Goldman Sachs type accounting tricks. You know, most recently they wanted to take the tobacco settlement money. They wanted to basically securitize that, like you would, you know, basically sell off portions of what we expect to get from the tobacco settlement to people. So they would get that money in the future and we would get cash today as a budget. Well, I mean, I hope I didn't say that too fast. I mean, basically you're borrowing on money you expect to get to plug a budget, when that's crazy. You know, your state budget should be covered by your state revenue, and you shouldn't. You know, these one-time tricks are not real solutions. And
yeah, should we move on to Friedenberg?
Yeah,
yeah. I thought that was a disappointing result.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm not really surprised.
I mean, yeah. Why aren't you surprised?
I mean, Republican. This is a Republican district. Marino is the, you know, 4 or 5 year incumbent. I guess he's the 4 year incumbent.
Isn't he from 2010?
Yeah, he's from the 2010 wave. It just.
Okay. You said 4 year. You mean 4 term, right?
Yeah, 4 term. Yeah, sorry. And I mean, I guess he, you know, he does all the right things. He says he sticks with the party line. And,
okay, but like, you know, let's say you're right.
And he also has a ton of money.
Then why did he worry about the 60 Minutes reporting? Like, why would he even bother trying to push back on that? Because it didn't.
Well, he was trying to be the drug czar at that point.
Mm.
And it did look pretty bad.
I mean, I want to come back to Marino, but I was thinking about this in terms of Fred Keller, who's the state representative, who basically, like, I'm just throwing this out as a different way to think about this, really doesn't need to campaign, really doesn't need to try at all to get Democratic votes. And Fred does a little bit, or maybe more than a little bit. And I was sort of thinking, why does, like, what's the motivation for any politician to still continue to try and seem like they're reaching across the aisle? I mean, there must be some normative pressure, either from their allies or from being in governance. Like, I understand that, you know, somebody who has a very small elected office, yeah. But just purely in pure, like, rational economic thinker terms, Fred doesn't need to campaign.
No, he doesn't.
So why bother?
I mean, he could come, you know, have a competitive race in the future after redistricting.
But the same is true for Marino. I mean, Marino didn't really need to campaign. Now, he didn't very much, so maybe he took my advice more. Yeah. Didn't seem to me he campaigned much.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway,
I mean,
Mark Friedenberg was spending a lot on social media,
digital.
Had a lot of young people excited. I mean, he was supposed to be, seemed to me he was following a hashtag resistance / Ocasio-Cortez kind of model, just trying to build the, let's call it the new Democratic majority. He ran on a pretty, even if he didn't call it, I mean, he ran on a Bernie Sanders platform. He was a Bernie Sanders representative, and it didn't move the needle at all. And I feel like in the national discussions, if you listen to liberal lefty podcasts, everybody's like, this is what the Democratic Party needs to do. It needs to eschew, needs to reject, you know, being a moderate and blue dogs and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it didn't get Mark Greenberg anywhere.
I think, well, okay, but here's my hypothesis on that. Mm-hmm. If you look at actually how much money that he ended up spending on this sort of digital content, his whole campaign really didn't cost that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know I think they actually just barely broke $100,000 in donations. And, you know, you and I were paying attention, so we knew it. But I wonder if this was very much a peripheral race for you, if you would even have, you know, known about it. Like I think that I do think that his model isn't wrong. I think he ran on the right things. You know, going after Marino on the opioid crisis and on healthcare, like, and maybe in rural broadband and antitrust and stuff like that, like, those are winning issues because Marino's very weak there. But I wonder if he had the kind of firepower to actually get his message out there. Like,
well, so how do you get your message out in town and country areas?
Well, I don't think that digital is a totally failed strategy here, but I mean, because
it's not a failed strategy.
Digital. I mean, I think that digital is actually kind of the way of the future here. But I mean, what you really lack is, you know, if you look at
you're running on rural broadband for people who don't, you know, you're running a digital campaign about how we need rural broadband, trying to convince people in an area that doesn't have rural broadband.
Yeah. Exactly. But bear with me here. Like, okay. Something Marino did that is really quite nice, you know, is he made donations to each of these small Republican county committees. You know, if Friedenberg really had his act together and he had money to burn, you know, instead of the county committees donating to Friedenberg, you know, he would make a $10,000 investment in each of these county committees, you know, way in the future. So that they can, you know, make sure that they have the resources, you know, the smaller county committees, you know, if you give them $10,000 or something like that, they'll spend it really well. And, you know, I mean, I think so at least. And, you know, it's.
Where would somebody like Friedenberg get that kind of money?
Well, I mean, I think what you do is it's the small dollar donations.
So you need to have a Beto O'Rourke level of popularity. I'm just throwing this out. And attract. Basically, Friedenberg's star power, the star power of an insurgent Democrat, attracts money from the richer parts of our coalition, the Phillies and the Pittsburghs, to reinvest in growing.
They don't start the race, though, a megastar. He became a megastar because of viral video content, though.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and I think Friedenberg actually could have done that. You know, just an unabashed progressive message. that inspires people to get involved and donate, you know, chip in $5 every month or something like that. But I just didn't see that really.
Do you think he could have or should have? I'm worried that I'm burning any bridges. You know, I know Mark, and I never know how.
I do too, and I really like him.
Well, so I'm in this weird place where I'm like, what if he's going to run again? What if I want to like work for him? But you know, I guess the ship has sailed, and I feel like I need to be honest on the podcast. I mean, should he have reached out to Judy Herschel's, that she was his primary opponent? I don't know what happened there, and you know, maybe he tried, but you know, we had a competitive primary. Did he do enough to reach out to her core supporters?
I don't know. He didn't do particularly well in like the Judy Herschel parts of the districts. I think she ultimately would have done better, but I don't know. I think that if Friedenberg had, like, you know, I don't want to sound like a dick, but like reached his potential as a candidate, you know, and like done the Beto style fundraising on Facebook and stuff like that, you know, and gotten a lot more money. You know, I think he could have done, you know, quite a bit better, but, I don't know. As it stands, I think that Judy was maybe like just looking at on paper, like she might have done better.
I mean, this is probably too simplistic, but the thing that, I don't know if I said this publicly, but it always seemed to me he was the better message. He had the better message and she was the better messenger. And it's, you know,
That's fair.
There were some people I know in the primary who were really attracted to how Mark was a Moms Demand Action endorsed candidate. And when I tried to say to them, yeah, but Judy's good on those issues, that wasn't good enough for them. They wanted a lot more visible support for that. And I'm, you know, I think I'm more pragmatic. I mean, I'm much more interested in who seems like they can run a good campaign. And, you know, as long as they're not going to, you know, vote to gut labor unions or, you know, be a shill for oil and coal, you know, it's broadly a vote on our side. So, I mean, yeah, I was frustrated. I mean, I try not to get into these games too much, but I was kind of frustrated with primary voters in this primary because, you know, it goes back to what I was joking about it a minute ago. I gave up, I guess around the time Trump was winning, I gave up thinking that we need to have a candidate who has really good policy issues and writes good like policy papers. I mean, I'm just like, that's some sort of liberal fantasy about how we win elections on ideas and smarts. Like we need smarts and we need ideas about how to win, but it's not ideas and smarts about policy. It's ideas and smarts about how to build winning campaigns. But maybe I've gone too far. You know, maybe I'm become like a caricature of somebody who only, you know, the kind of Democratic operative I would mock and ridicule who only cares about appearance and flash. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If Mark had run an issue-based campaign that was even more clearly focused on rural broadband, would that have moved the needle? I don't know. But these are all open questions for me.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that if you're going to run and win in PA-12, mm-hmm. you need to run an extremely innovative, like you just really need to like, you know, throw some really crazy shit out there and see what sticks.
I mean,
basically,
I would say, I'm just making this up, but if I were a candidate, you know, I would run on, like a rural platform would be, legalizing marijuana.
Definitely. Yes, please.
Yeah. I'm trying to get at something like that's against eminent domain, but not sound so wordy, right? Like enable local communities to protect their prerogatives about land use. I would run on rural renewable energy.
Yeah.
And I would run on like local food economies. You know, you get
farmers.
You know, and I wouldn't worry that much about.
I would run a like really robust digital campaign and then get like a Paul Wellstone style bus and just go all around the district.
See,
like,
I would do that, but I would do digital and direct mail. Like, I think that that's the thing that people don't realize. I would put more money into direct mail than radio or TV in this area, because I think that that still works.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah. And I mean, I would love on radio and TV, but
people over 40.
Yeah. And text messaging too is quickly becoming a,
right.
a thing of the future. And the thing that's the strategy with radio and TV is to the Trumpian earned media trick, you know?
Right. I actually would focus on radio. Yeah, people listen to radio a lot around here, but I wouldn't worry about TV that much.
Well, yeah, but you know, if you like, you know, do some sort of like, you know, sort of Gene Stilp styled, like,
yeah,
you know, like
theater,
you know, event, the political theater, you know, you get on the radio and the TV, you know, and then if you just try and do one of those, like every few weeks, you're good.
Yeah. Well, so there we go.
You know, that's on message.
So we have a playbook. Now we need a candidate.
Yeah. Well, we have enough time. It's still 2018. should we move on to Jen's campaign?
No. Except I want to say this. I want to say this about Mark and Jen, I don't think we do enough to thank the people like Jen and Mark and Linda Sozniak and Sarah Donnelly and Carrie Heath and Ernie Page for running. I mean,
put their heart.
It is hard as hell, and it is a punch to the stomach to get beat badly. And you know, as far as I know, almost all of them are planning to continue to be involved in one way or another, maybe run again. And I feel like in the past we've had people try, get smacked around, and then understandably kind of retreat other things.
Like, we'll screw this.
So I know I read this great thing about Uses of a Whirlwind. It's a book about movement organizing, but it has a passage from Hosea that's like, those who sow the wind, those who sow the wind will reap their harvest in the whirlwind or something like that. And it was very poetic, but I was like, you know, these are the kinds of, I love the imagery of that. And it sort of captures social movement energy better than a lot of organizational language, you know, that's about building machines. This is about, these are, you know, nature metaphors and allegories. And I think that's right. You know, we don't know what the positive impact, you know, Shannon Eaton, who interned for Jen, who's going to Susquehanna, you know, maybe she's going to be this amazing hotshot who's going to crack the rural progressive code, or, you know what I mean? Like, or she inspired somebody else to run for borough council. And, like, we can't always know because they're, it's hard to track the cause and correlation of these things, but it matters. And that's the problem is we know it's going to matter in the long run, but we don't know which thing that a Jen or a Mark or a Sarah Donnelly or Linda Sozniak does. And we need the party and other people to invest in those ideas, knowing that we may not see the results or be able to clearly point to them. But the people who go and get money for these things are like, well, I can deliver 10,000 votes or whatever. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And, you know, I'll say this right here. You know, we're having an open Senate, or it's probably going to be open. I've heard that Gene Yaw isn't going to run again for state Senate. And, you know, we have an open seat. And I think Linda Sozniak, she did really well in her district. You know, it's a pretty solidly Republican district. I don't even think they've, you know, in recent memory have had a Republican or a Democratic opponent. She, you know, did low mid 30s. And I think that she'd be, I think she ran a great campaign too. And I'd love to see her run for, run for state Senate. I think she'd do a really good job. Really quickly, just to go a little bit more hyper-local here. Did you see that Billy Allred has announced his candidacy for Union County Commissioner?
That's all I know. I know that he announced.
I sort of read the article that he announced in the Daily Item. And some things I thought were pretty cool parts of his platform. You know, one was making the meetings during evening hours instead of at like 2 p.m. on Tuesdays, which is the stupidest time to to me.
That's very fair.
And then also,
although honestly you should move around because some people work at night. So
Yeah, that's true. But also, I think he ran on making them videoed in, videotaped rather, or like live streamed or something like that, which is, I think, also is a great idea. Coincidentally, yeah. Matt Schumacher ran on that in 2015, and I'm still waiting for the. I'm still waiting for the Buffalo Township meeting live stream. So
live streams. That's funny because there have been several times where Matt has made public statements that we tried to get him to give us the written version of just for the record, and then he refused to.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, the Parks Committee meetings are not public.
Oh boy.
So Billy Allred did say those things, which I agree and applaud, and hope he, you know, if he gets elected, then I hope he does that. The things that seemed a little bit scary to me was his opposition to the county takeover of the rail trail, which is already done, but that seems like a better, like, it kind of doesn't make sense for East Buffalo in Lewisburg to shoulder the burden of that when it runs through so many different municipalities.
Does it make sense?
It makes sense for it to be a county program.
Right.
It doesn't make sense for it just to be East Buffalo and Lewisburg that pay for that. And then his other thing is that he wanted to see more privatization of the county government, which I don't even know what the hell he's talking about. Like, what on earth, you know, it's a pretty bare bones operation. Like, what on earth are probably you planning to privatize? Oh, well, they should definitely sell that, but he should have just said that. You know?
I'm reading it now.
Like, I don't
suppose selling the property. I don't know what other. I agree with you, though. If I don't know what else you would privatize. The GIS department? Why?
We'll privatize the elections. I know a great guy
that'll run. Probably mine. I mean, what's in that building? You know, emergency services,
elections, and GIS.
GIS. There's some other money that, you know, they take state and federal money that are for different kinds of social services. Maybe he means housing and services for.
Yeah, but I was thinking maybe he was talking about the rail trail.
Oh,
like privatize the rail trail? What are you going to ask for a toll?
Yeah.
I thought that was, he's either just saying a Republican talking point, you know, we'll privatize things, or he actually had something rather insidious in mind. I don't know which it is. He probably just was talking about a, you know, just sort of a general Republican, let's privatize things. Although, you know, you do see some Republicans talking about how there's not really a need for public parks and stuff like that, but rather it should be like individual organizations, like the dog, you know, Chargray's dog, you know, whatever that thing is that the church bought.
Well, he's just not making any sense here. He says, I'm reading the article, he doesn't like the increase in the hotel room tax from 5 to 3%, but he thinks we should do more to encourage tourism by building infrastructure. Well, the infrastructure is the rail trail, among other things. I mean, that's tourism infrastructure because it attracts people. So, and furthermore, given that you want the rail trail to be something that's used, I mean, to me, you know, you try and match tax revenues if you can to the people who use and benefit from the service. So with people coming from out of county, the only way for us to collect any, you know, any revenue from them, aside from a toll, which is not a good idea, is a hotel room tax. Makes a lot of sense.
We'll set up a toll on the bridge between Montandon and Lewisburg.
So I mean, just reading this briefly, I think his comments about privatization are just like he's saying what he thinks philosophically, not there's nothing in this newspaper article that seems like a specific proposal. Aside from what we said, some brings some commons. Anyway, we need to move on. I know you wanted to go even, unless you want to go more hyper local and discuss Limestone Township or something.
I go all day. We can talk about the politics inside of the Zimcom household if you want.
No, although both of my twins, Allie and Thea, Allie did a lot he canvassed several times and did phone banking, and even Thea did some phone banking. Oh. And she's not one. She doesn't like, you know, talking about politics or talking to people. And part of it was the stakes of the election, but part of it's also and I forget his name now, but the citizenship or civics class they take in high school, they have loved it. And so, you know, kudos.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it Britain?
No, it's, I'm going to make a mistake. I can't remember who it is. It's a younger guy, I think. But, you know, one thing he had them do was groups of students had to come up with a constitutional amendment that they liked. And then the whole class, like, heard a presentation and voted on it. And, you know, it really got them thinking about, you know, what would change. I think Thea's was about the death penalty, actually, about getting rid of the death penalty. And Ali's was something that Bernie Sanders has been behind. It's like a, it's kind of a blanket thing. It has to do with corporate. It's like making democracy for people amendment, but it's got a campaign finance piece and a corporate, you know, corporations having too much political. It's trying to undo citizenship.
I would make my amendment. You know, universal basic income.
Mm-hmm.
Mine would be even better. Universal basic marijuana, UBM.
We should do another bracket time about amendments we'd like to see. You know, abolish the Electoral College. You know, a couple more, right to privacy, a real constitutional amendment that names privacy. That would be fun. Okay, let's talk about Pelosi for a few minutes, and then I need to go.
Okay, great. So, I mean, when we originally wrote this agenda a while ago, it was sort of up in the air as to whether or not Pelosi would garner a serious challenger. For a while, is it Marsha Fudge from Ohio?
She was one.
She was one that, like, said she might toss her hat in the ring, but I think that fizzled. But then she just has not been able to garner a strong opponent. Although in the Democratic caucus vote, there were, I think, 32 Democrats that voted against her. It wasn't a unanimous vote. So there is clearly a little bit of a dissension in the party about Pelosi.
I mean, Marsha Fudge was one of the ones who signed a letter not supporting Pelosi, and then she changed her mind.
Yeah.
So here's a couple of things, and I'm going to admit that I have not followed this, like, sort of horse race style super, super carefully. But, you know, John Peeler, who's a local scribe and pundit, you know, he wrote a piece saying what I've heard a lot of people say, which is something like, you know, aside from the fact that Pelosi's good, you know, is good at what she does, there's also, she's a woman, so to not support her. One of John Peeler's points was that the Republicans and the conservative media and the have demonized Nancy Pelosi so much that that's totally true. That's totally true. But what I find frustrating about that is it not from somebody like me, who I'm not crazy about her as speaker. Just because I disagree with her as speaker doesn't mean that I endorse the misogyny of her, you know, and or the misogynization against her or against Hillary Clinton. Same thing with Hillary Clinton.
Totally.
And I get tired of having to defend that I'm not misogynistic to people on my side. And somebody pointed out, I can't remember who it was, but like, look at how bad women.
I said, how bad for you?
I know. Boo-hoo. It's tough on a white male. But also, you know, rather than hold up is, I would rather hold up, if we're going to talk about what are we doing to improve the political opportunities for women and to make our political system more fair. I mean, I would hold up the dozens and dozens of women who won in the House and at the state level. You know, like it's the multitude of women, not a single woman, that should matter. So there's that piece. And the other thing that I want to say about this, John Peeler basically was saying this is not the time, basically like, oh, no. The tone of his piece was something like, oh, no, there go Democrats again. having an internal fight. And then I'm looking right now at an NPR piece, which says something about after more than a year of party angst, I'm reading from the article now, of a year of party angst about needing fresh and younger faces in leadership, House Democrats almost certainly emerged from their internal caucus election with the same three people in its top post. So Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and James Clyburn. Okay, so my point is that John and the mainstream media, like, John worries about how the media reinforces a misogyny trope, but I worry about how they reinforce a Democrats are disorganized trope. It is healthy and normal that we have an internal debate about who should lead us. Nancy Pelosi, for all of her strengths, was one of the key people who was at the helm, along with Barack Obama, when we got hammered in 2010, and we lost state houses right at the point at which the gerrymandering technology and the census were converging. And to not see that long-term strategic trend and not better plan for it, like, there should be some accountability. And so what my point is, which I might have buried, is like, what about the way that the Democrats are demonized as always being disorganized? I mean, we had a Never Trump movement, and now the whole country and the media act like the Republican Party is completely unified, and they're not. They're still sniping at him. Yeah. So that's the main takeaway I wanted to say. You know, I want Pelosi to do well. I think she can bring a lot of strengths. But
I do too. And
we had to go with her. It wasn't inevitable that we had to go with her, and nor was it inevitable that this is the time to go with our tried and true, well-known leaders. Sorry, what were you trying to say?
Well, so my deal is that, you know, I think I ultimately do support Nancy Pelosi. If I were a member of Congress faced with this decision, I probably would have voted yes. Because there was no viable alternative. But that problem did not arise in the last 2 months. That problem was there in 2016, and it was there in 2014, and, you know, many years back. You know, Democrats have an extremely weak leadership bench, of people that have been in leadership positions for long periods of time, getting used to things. You know, like, that was a strategic error 10 years ago. The fact that our top three Democrats in the House are all in their, like, 70s or 80s or something like that, you know, that's a huge issue. And it should have been flagged many years ago. But, you know, and here's the but, you know, I don't think that we're going to fix this right now. And, you know, like we need to just make moves right now to fix this. And I feel like that's being done, as we see these, cool, awesome freshman Democrats come in and make, you know, names for themselves and, get into some cool positions, and lead committees and, you know, get accomplished at doing this work. We're not going to fix this problem right now. You know,
the average of Steny Hoyer, Nancy Pelosi, and James Clyburn is 78.5 years.
Yeah. That's way too late, or that's way too old to lead. You know, we're a young party, you know, and we need the leadership to reflect that. There should be more diversity in that.
Yeah. And in that, and also it seems to me, I don't know the total leadership like row, but it's six or seven people, right? Mm-hmm. Like one of them, there should always be someone who's been elected in the last two or three cycles, right? They should always have like, you know, recently elected, which isn't always going to be young, but that may be more, what may matter more is when you got elected. Like that should be part of the leadership. And the other thing is, right, we're a Democratic Party, which has lots of values about openness and change and transparency. And then we have this internal party structure, which seems to me from the outside looking in,
like
deeply hierarchical, hidebound to tradition. Yeah. It's about quid pro quo. And so then when we who are on the front lines and trying to get people excited about our party, then run into this buzzsaw of like, well, this is the way things are done and you better shut up and get to the back of the line. It's disheartening. And I don't like being told, well, that's just the way it is. You know, well, that's not what motivates me about politics. I don't get excited. That's not why I signed up. And I can be a pragmatist, but that doesn't mean I have to like it when, you know, my pragmatism is a means to an end, not an end unto itself. And I get frustrated and tired when people are like, oh, but we need to be pragmatic. That's not an end unto itself for me. And I don't think that's motivating for people.
So, yeah, I mean, I hope that.
But I agree with you. You know, who is the viable alternative? And the fact, like, when I put this on my Facebook wall, and people acted like I was saying the choices between Ocasio-Cortez and Nancy Pelosi. And I was like, no, that's not the choice. Yeah. But I don't know who the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th are. And that is a problem.
That's kind of why I supported Tim Ryan in 2016 for the leadership. You know, it seemed like a good time to just like, all right, new slate, Tim Ryan, you're in, you know, that would have been a better time to change leadership. But right now, you know, we finally have some power to do things. But, I mean, in my opinion, Pelosi should have stepped aside in 2016 after that loss.
We should have a way. We should have like a council of the wise who advise the leadership, because she and Clyburn, obviously they have great things to offer. I have one more thing to say. And I really, really, really have to go after that. But in this NPR article, this is an example to me of how the media are not covering this well. At the end, they talk about the 6th position, I think, in the leadership. And so 48-year-old Hakeem Jeffries of New York was elected as caucus chair, and he beat out Barbara Lee of California. And so Barbara Lee is older. She's a woman, and she's more liberal, but Jeffries won. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I wanted. You know, this is not about left-right. It's really about age and newness.
Yeah. You know? Republicans have done really well at that. I can hear myself talk.
Mm-hmm. I can hear you.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to
go ahead? I don't know. Just finish your thought.
Well, anyway. Okay. You know, the Republicans have done really well at this. I mean, look at Paul Ryan, Scott Walker, Ted Cruz, Tom Cotton, you know, I could go on Ben Sasse. I could go on, you know, these are all Republicans in their 40s or 50s that are, you know, Ryan's previous, you know, that, you know, they could be active for 30 more years in politics.
Right.
You know, and they have pretty deep resumes, and the Democrats, you know, we did a lot of this year with, you know, a lot of younger candidates, but you know, it's something that we've struggled with.
Yeah. And meanwhile, we make jokes about giving up our organs to Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, are we done? Chambersburg, Middle
Creek, Blake City, Falls Creek,
Shepherdstown, okay. Downtown, Shepherdstown, Lordstown, Easttown, Doylestown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanic Grove, Swissville, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela. Oh, well, I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley, man. I be the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Oh, I've been everywhere, man.